Now, next Saturday, Sydney Philharmonic Choirs is putting on a show at the White Bay Power Station. Lost Birds is a powerful concert inspired by the natural world. And to tell us more about it, our very own Lost Bird, Brett Waymark, artistic and musical director of Sydney Philharmonic Choirs, joins us now. Brett, how are you?
Am I really a Lost Bird?
I don't know. That's the
nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. Well, at least today.
Well, that's lovely.
And you're the only person I've seen today. So
perfect. So we've gotten off to a good start.
We do.
I always like to try and make you chuckle before I get the show on. So
that's very good. You didn't. Yeah, that was great. I'm glad you didn't give that one away.
I just had that one in the back of my head for about a week.
I'm
holding on to that.
Yeah, it's good.
How are you, Brett?
I'm very well.
This is your fifth time back in the studio.
Gosh, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Keeping track of them. Not that I'm counting.
No.
But you've got this lovely Lost Birds show coming up at White Bear Power Station. So I just want to tell us a little bit about all what's going on.
Well, the funny thing is, a bit like you, I mean, we walked in there last year in 2024 when it was open for the Biennale, and we knew that this former coal-fired power station, which I think was decommissioned around 1983. And I mean, let's just think about it. It was built, I think, about 1912, opened about 1917. It supplied all of the power for Sydney's train and tram network. So pretty important building. And then, on the other hand, it was full of industrial chemicals, pumped pretty awful things into our atmosphere. When it closed, it was deemed inoperable because it was full of asbestos, so you couldn't go in there. And again, for a long period of time, people thought, do we pull it down or do we try and turn it into a creative space? So thank God they've cleaned the place up. And you go in now and they've done the most extraordinary job of keeping the industrial heritage there, because it is a glorious monument and testament to the skill of these workers who worked there. And also it's an important part that it played in the infrastructure of Sydney. But at the same time, now we can look at it and go, what a bizarre idea to have such a pollution pumping machine right next to where people lived. So this idea that the place has now become a place for creativity, so Biennale, dance parties, concerts, SYO have done quite a lot of concerts there as well. It's our first time there. Felt like, let's explore some repertoire that looks at that sort of dichotomy of things that have damaged the environment, but with also a sense of hope.
Mm.
And I think both these pieces represent that. Joe Twist's Timeless Land, he came back to Australia in 2020, naturally because of the pandemic, stayed with his parents up at Burleigh Heads. He started to explore the relationship he was having with nature. You know, it was providing the greatest solace for him, but at the same time, he was acutely aware of the bushfires from 2019. And how this precious world that we live in could easily be taken away from us very, very quickly. So on one level, his piece exploring, Australia through the eyes of a lot of Australian poets from Banjo Paterson right through to contemporary poetry, sort of takes us on a journey from just the lushness of just watching a dawn on the beach through to, actually, oddly enough, the biggest resonance with this program, the last movement around what's happened to sacred indigenous sites for the production of oil and power. And so that links very nicely with the White Bay station as a place for this as well. And then in the second half, you've got Christopher Tin, who's an American composer. He's done a lot of game show recordings. He's done a lot of choral work. And there's also a massive thing called The End of Turandot that he's just finished writing in 2024. But this extraordinary piece, which looks at extinction through the eyes of the 19th century, and particularly through female poets. So we think of climate change as something, I mean, I remember the first time I saw Bob Hawke talk about climate change with his granddaughter, I think, on his knee. And so we've been talking about this for a long time, since the 70s, we've been talking about climate change in this country, or what I can't quite remember what we called it back then. But actually, we're acutely aware of that in the 19th century as well, when, huge flocks of birds that once were absolutely everywhere started to just disappear as a combination of men shooting them down for food, industrialization of the pastoral landscape, the population all going to the cities and actually having that huge effect on the environment that comes when a whole bunch of people congregate in one place. So really, it's a lovely program that explores all of that. But again, it's not beat us over the head type stuff. The music is so beautiful and there is such a sense of hope about it, that actually it's the nuanced and interesting way to talk about climate change, in the sense that we can get ourselves out of this. Mm. We just need to make some serious changes. So it's not all gloom and doom. And, the audience, seems to have responded to it. We have got at least 800 people coming to this performance tomorrow, which is the biggest audience we've had for any of these sorts of performances that we do outside of the Sydney Opera House. I've just spoken for like 14 minutes.
No, it's
great. Do you want to ask a question?
I always like to throw one out to you and let you go.
Fushka.
Because you just give us a
Sorry about that. Just give us a
good overview of what's going on. So you've paired. I should have a chalkboard
lecture. There we go.
Let's hold up a sign.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Stop.
Wrap it up.
Yeah.
Anyway, Chris. So you've paired Christopher Tin's Lost Birds, which is almost like a British romantic response to the changing world around them they've seen in the 19th century. You've paired it with Joe Twist's
Timeless Land.
Timeless Land. There you go. Timeless Land. So what? Which is almost like an Australian romantic reaction to the change to industrialization and climate change. So what made you pair those two particular cycles together?
Well, oddly enough, they both have the film score background. So the last time I saw Joe before the pandemic was in 2019 in Los Angeles, where we both went to the premiere of Eric Whitaker's The Sacred Veil together. And we talked about a possible commission, and this one came out from another choir. Sydney Chamber Choir actually ended up commissioning this, but we were talking about something else at the time as well. And then since then, I've also worked with Joe on his opera Watershed for Opera Australia, and that's an amazing work. So, you know, the idea of exploring another work of Joe's was very sort of close to my heart. I think his style is amazing because he actually he trained as a singer as well. He sang in choirs all through his childhood, and his first big commissions were from choirs before he ventured into the sort of Hollywood Zoolander 2 world that he inhabited. And it's interesting with Christopher Tin as well. He had a double degree in both music and English literature, and I think
That definitely comes through.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, you know, quite often with choral music, you're double blessed. You've got this extraordinary musical palette, but actually part of the joy of exploring choral music is the texts that have inspired the works. And I think, you know, there is much to be gained from just the poetry, let alone how that poetry is then amplified when you add voices, instruments, and a context. And that's very much what the White Bay Power Station gives us. You know, if we were performing this at City Recital Hall, we probably wouldn't be performing this repertoire. Mm. It wouldn't have been the inspiration that the building became for this particular program.
The location informs the program.
Absolutely.
And you're closing out the performance with a choral version of Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Autumn and Winter, by former musical director Joanna Forbes-Lestrange. So what was the idea behind putting that one to close out the show?
Yeah, so look, I mean, when was it? It was around the 1950s that the Western world sort of rediscovered the Four Seasons by Vivaldi, but it was huge during the 18th century. You know, J.S. Bach, a cantata number BWV 27, is a complete rewriting of the spring opening movement, and you can hear that. Various composers took, you know, bits of the Four Seasons and used it as models for other pieces as well. Vivaldi himself used it in at least three or four of his operas. So this idea, and it's the effect is called parody. It's when you take one thing and you replant it somewhere else. So that was done all through that period. So what Joanna was looking at was, well, let's just do something similar now in the 21st century.
Why not?
And, you know, from a very early age, she listened to these and just went, what a shame they're not set for the voice, because they're just so tuneful and so, such earworms. So she had this conceit in her head of, what if I could find poetry that suggested that actually the words did come first, and then Vivaldi was actually responding to the words that I actually am putting to it. So the choirs had a great deal of fun sort of exploring this, and I will hear it for the first time at 2 o'clock this afternoon when I hear the strings down of White Bay. I mean, that's the joy of doing something new. You have no idea what it's going to sound like, what you do in your head, but, you know, today's a very interesting day. We have the strings for the first time at 2 o'clock, then the choir come in at 6:30 tonight. We put it together for the first time in the space and just find out if the whole thing actually works. But it's a lovely way of, you know, starting the program. We start both halves with it. So we start with autumn, take the interval, and then winter opens the second half. And it's just a lovely way of just providing for the audience something that they already know. So then it's a journey away from the familiar into these two other pieces.
Fantastic. I suppose I should just let you plug the program before I have to let you
yes,
go.
Yes, I should. You know, well, get in now, because actually, you know, the production meeting we had the other day was, I think we're going to need more seats. Mm. So get onto our website. It's 2:00 this Saturday. If nothing else, the building is just so extraordinary to explore, because the rich industrial heritage has been beautifully preserved there, but at the same time, has been opened up, so it's a place where creativity can take place. And like I said, we would not be doing these works were we to be performing in the Sydney Opera House. Mm. There's a real marriage between the content and the space for this program, and that's something that we're very excited about.
Wonderful. So get on it.
Yes, indeed. I'm even going to go.
I mean, it's incredible that you...
Good Lord.
You never go to these things.
That's the problem. I think you've never been double booked.
You've never been one to. You've never struck me as a fan of classical music, Brett.
Now there's another conversation to be had, Cameron.
Yes. Well, Brett, as always, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Lovely to be here.
And
it's warm in here.
It is, isn't it?
It's very nice.
It's not so warm outside.
Nicht so gut.
Good luck.
Thank you.
That was Brett Waymark, musical director of the Sydney Philharmonic Choirs, here on 2SER 107.3 for the fifth time in his illustrious lifetime.
Radio career.
In his radio career. It's Thursday Daily here on 2SER 107.3.